Auto press, don't know the episode.
62, I think.
62. Anyway, and Justin Tereshko, fresh off the trip to Oregon.
Is this back to back, JT?
It's back to back. I don't know what I did to deserve this, but I am forever grateful.
Well, JP got over here and he said, Justin wants to talk about the USAM. And I said, he said, but only for like 10 minutes. And I said, well, I'd rather talk about the USAM than Jim Herman.
Oh, how can you hate on Jim Herman? Did you say this was episode 62?
62.
Ah, that's the only score you didn't shoot this weekend. You shot 61 and 63.
Yeah, pretty good weekend.
So funny story about Jim Herman, real quick. He spoke at our golf coaching convention last year, and it was in like the program that he was going to be speaking. And I was pumped up about it because I like tour pros, you know, whatever. And I tweeted at John Merrick. Was it John Merrick?
No, it was Jim Renner.
Jim Renner. I tweeted at Jim Renner. And I was like, hey, man, can't wait to hear what you have to say at the coaches convention today. And he responds, he's like, yeah, I don't think I'm in Vegas, bud.
I don't even know who Jim Renner is.
He's from Massachusetts, I think.
He's on the tour sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. So you... So you had him mixed up completely?
Yeah.
That's good.
I ended up deleting the tweet, but...
Well, I mean, Jim Herman has now won... He didn't win until he was 38. Now he's won three times.
He's 42.
I mean he's won more times on the PGA Tour in the past five seasons than Ricky Fowler. Think about that. Like,
he's won twice in the last 13 months, if you just want to pick arbitrary...
In his last... 40 PGA Tour starts. He has two top 25s.
He's got
They're both wins. Did you see how nervous he looked watching the Billy Horschel putt on that last hole? I mean, he was fumbling. Jim Herman was fumbling his water bottle and trying to drink with a cap on.
I mean, like, it's about time they show what 99.9% of the people watching feel like. Because right. I always feel like people know they're on TV, so they just sit there, try and act all cool, calm, and relaxed. But, hey, like, that's Jim's the people's champion.
Jim Herman's the guy that shows up without a game on a Saturday. And he's just putting around the putting green. He's on the wait list with the pro shop. Like, put me in if you got somebody extra.
Somebody said he looked like the guy you'd get paired with at your state mid-am. That's so true.
He did give a great speech, though. And he's really good friends with Donald Trump. Trump 2020.
Oh, really? Nice. Well, the, good for him.
How about Jim Herman? Did you guys know that Jim Herman is the only player in the FedEx Cup era to win a PGA Tour event and miss the FedEx Cup playoffs that season?
That's a lie. Martin Trainer did it last year.
Hold on. So last year,
Martin Trainer won Puerto Rico last year and didn't make the playoffs.
Oh, so I guess so. So they both did the same thing. They both won the opposite field event and didn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost impossible.
It's tough.
Well, I think they only got 300 FedEx Cup points for those victories. Right. Because I think they're both, one was during the British and the other was during a WGC.
But it gets you on tour for 2 years.
That's true. Well, I mean, think about it. I mean, Martin Trainer won Puerto Rico in the fall. That's, I mean, what a genius. Because he gets that entire year plus two more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jim Herman, oh, you get the rest of this season. Oh, great. You get one more event guaranteed and that's it.
How was Jim Herman 192 on the FedEx Cup? Had he been playing, or had he been hard? He said something about some injuries, but
he hadn't had a top 25 finish this season.
That'll do it. That's right. I looked. His best finish was the Tournament of Champions, where he finished 27th, and that's a 32 man field.
That was his best finish. That's also the only cut that Martin Trainer's made this year.
Man,
is he? Are you serious?
I'm pretty sure. I was looking through it today. He's like dead last in scoring average.
You remember a couple two or three weeks ago, his Martin Trainer's caddy Monday'd in to an event, and he had better odds than Martin Trainer. He had better betting odds. The good times. Well, what other Jim Herman stats you got?
Hey, you're firing away with these.
Jim Herman, his average score the last 40 holes of the Wyndham Championship was 3.38. That's incredible.
63, 61, and I guess he turned it on a few holes before that.
He birdied three of the last four in round two to make the cut.
Wow. B. Todd almost birdied the last four to make the cut on the number. Brendan birdied 15, 16, and 17, and then missed like a 25-footer on 18 that would have made the cut.
I mean, I used to be a member at Sedgefield when I coached D3 at Guilford in Greensboro, and I probably played that Sedgefield because there was two courses. I played that one 15 to 20 times. If you hit the fairway off the tee, that might be one of the easiest golf courses in America that's over 7,000 yards. But boy, if you are not hitting the fairway, like, good luck.
Yeah, those guys had no chance from the rough. I mean, especially this time of year, and they could get that Bermuda rough, as you know, as nasty as they wanted, I'm sure.
So I have to correct a previous thing I said about Martin Trainer. He's made two cuts this year. One was a no-cut event at the
Tournament of Champions,
and the other one was the Genesis.
That's a pretty good cut to make.
He's made $89,000 through 21 events.
Ooh. That's tough.
All right.
One more observation about the Wyndham. Billy Horschel, I thought Billy Horschel was going to turn into Martin Kaymer, like with the sweat on the arms and pulling up the shirt. I mean, the arms just glistening, just like Martin Kaymer. Thought that was Billy Horschel, like, he's been working out.
What does this have to do with Martin Kaymer?
That's what Martin Kaymer does when he starts winning golf tournaments. He just
how many golf tournaments has Martin Kaymer won?
The Players, the U.S. Open.
This is like his thing that he pulls his sleeves up. What are you talking about?
Like, just go back. Just go YouTube it.
But is this like something they talk about? Like,
it's just noticeable.
This is weird. Do you know where he's going here, JT?
I'm not going anywhere. I'm just making an observation.
All right.
It's time for me to make weird observations. Usually it's you, JP.
I mean, that one was out there.
Okay.
He pulls his sleeves up like Martin Kaymer.
He does.
And glistens.
I mean, by the way, how does Billy Horschel miss that putt on 18 to force the playoff when he got a perfect read from Doc Redman?
The putt that Jim Herman hit in the group in front of him, I don't know how Jim Herman's ball missed, and his ball missed high. And then I didn't think Billy Horschel hit a very good putt, but I don't know. What now, JP? JP's making weird motions over here.
I thought I heard a car pulling up to your driveway. Do you hear that?
Anyway, let's move on to back to the USAM, which was the real major.
That's right.
It's a helicopter. I feel like Peter Kessler just hearing a bunch of noises out here. We had to stop the podcast with Peter Kessler like seven times because of a train.
That's true.
So how about JP and myself both calling Ty Strafacci?
I know.
I went to depth about the Strafacci pick. I called him feisty. That's it.
Why did you pick him? Just because he'd won the North-South?
Yeah, I was like, I picked him because he won the North-South, which was stroke play and match play, just like the USAM. And then also he had won the Palmetto, too.
Yeah.
I know we were watching. I didn't see a ton until the semifinals and the finals, but I couldn't figure out how Strafacci kept winning.
His ball striking was unbelievable. His putting was sometimes hard to watch.
It was horrendous on some of them. I mean, he
was not making mistakes ball striking wise. I mean, you have to hit a pretty bad golf shot to hit it out of play off the tee there.
Yeah.
I mean, that is so forgiving off the tee. and they weren't playing it in the 40-mile-an-hour winds that I had to play that golf course in. So I'm not bitter, though.
I saw Spencer Ralston at breakfast last Saturday, and I said, how was it? And he's like, well, he said, other than getting the 3:05 tee time and the 10:50 tee time and having to play in the, you know, the 40-mile-an-hour wind like you did the first day, he's like, it was fine the second day.
Yeah.
But he's like, you know, the first day people shot 64 out there. He's like, there was no way, you know, people are shooting 64 playing anywhere near me. I mean,
there was not a round in the 60s that teed off after, at least on Bandon Dunes. So Bandon Dunes the first day it was very calm in the morning, and the wind started to pick up around 11:30 noon, and then it really picked up about 1:30, and it was, and from about 1:30 to 5:30, so there for about 4 hours, it was blowing consistently from 25 to 35 with gusts over 40. And the problem was the USGA knew with the setup, they knew that it was going to blow like that, so they had to move all the holes that were into the wind up. But the problem was the people that played in the morning, there was no wind.
Yeah.
So I know someone that hit a pitching wedge into a par three that I hit a 4-iron into later that day. And then I know someone, and then the following day, it was windy in the morning and calmed down in the afternoon. So if you got the late early draw, you got screwed, which is what I got.
You're a numbers guy. Did you go back and look how many people made it from your draw?
Yes. So the early late draw, out of the 64 people that made match play, 40 made it from the other. So only 24 made it from the late early draw, and 40 made it from the early late draw.
That was just a shot in the dark, by the way. I didn't know he was a numbers guy, but he had these Herman stats, and I'm like, maybe he's got this figured out. He was bored on a plane.
I did not count. I saw that on Twitter and just assumed. That's the person that did it. He had over 1,000 followers, so I assume.
Oh, yeah, big time. He's big time.
Nobody lies on Twitter.
Yeah, I was like, he was big time. So, which seemed about right, though. And I did notice, I did see that the scoring average, so if you teed off at Bandon Dunes round one after 10:30, your scoring average was 6.1 shots higher than if you played it in round two or the morning round one.
Ooh.
6.1.
Well, how much difference is there in the golf course of Bandon Dunes and Bandon Trails as far as difficulty?
They're two completely different golf courses. In 10 to 20 mile an hour winds, Bandon Trails is the harder golf course. In 40 mile an hour winds, it's Bandon Dunes, because Bandon Dunes, the course is on the ocean, where Bandon Trails, obviously, you can still see the ocean from spots. But it's more tree lined and
gotcha.
away from the ocean, so you're not getting the wind right off of the water.
I watch a lot of the US Amateur, and this is potentially a very stupid question I'm about to ask. For the final match, did they play both? Because we didn't see the coverage for the first round.
No, they played Bandon Dunes.
Did they used matches. To do that ever? Why don't they?
I think they did it. They did it. I know they did it at the mid-am that Hagestad beat Harvey at Stonewall. In 2016, maybe. And then I think they did it last year at Pinehurst.
Yeah, they did. They did. They played number four and then two. They played
two in the afternoon on TV.
And I could be completely wrong, but I'm not sure they didn't do that the year that Tiger beat Tripp Keeney at Sawgrass. I'm not sure they didn't play the Valley course in the morning.
Why wouldn't they?
Sawgrass in the afternoon. I think they did. I could be wrong on that, but...
So that wasn't a stupid
course.
Courses
were so similar, but the courses here were two completely different styles of golf, just because it was tree lined on half the holes at Bandon Trails, which actually the holes. So Bandon Trails, you had basically the first four holes were kind of a little out in the open, a little breezy. And then the middle 10 holes were kind of through some trees. It was kind of tree lined a little bit. And then the last four, it opened back up again. The 10 holes in the trees reminded me a lot of Pine Valley. Like, I could have closed my eyes, opened them, and then been like, oh, this looks exactly like one of the holes that you'd see at Pine Valley.
Not too many of our listeners are going to relate to that. We've got Lee Rogers will relate to that.
That's about it.
That's it. I don't know, Todd Pennington might listen.
Bannon Dunes, I didn't quite understand the design of the course. So all four par threes basically went in the same direction. So you had the same wind, which just happened to be into all week. And then the first three par fives, it was all downwind. So
you're over it. You're not a Bannon Dunes fan.
No, I'm not. I also, like, it's not a hard golf course. Like, in the practice round, we played it in 15 to 20 miles an hour wind. I didn't keep score, but if I did, I would have shot maybe two or three under probably. And I actually was thinking, oh, I don't think this place is that hard. Well, I spoke too soon because I shot 79 and did not feel like I played poorly.
I hate when the weather can just take over a course, honestly.
Well, you know, I'd always, watching the British Open, you always hear them say that, you know, the draw matters. And I remember always watching it be like, oh, it's just go play golf. Well, now I understand that the draw plays a huge part.
So you're not going to go to the British Amateur?
If you would have asked me that on the podcast last week, I'd have said, yeah. But after my experience, no, I have no desire to go over there.
But
like, so just to try and explain to you about how windy it was, I'll just tell one quick story. So the 13th hole at Bannon Dunes is a 570-yard par 5. It was dead downwind the day I played it, 40 miles an hour. I went driver gap wedge into a 570-yard hole.
Ooh.
The next hole is 200 yards shorter and goes into the wind. It's a par 4 that's 370. I hit driver 5 iron.
Yeah. I mean, that's just like some of the stuff in the British Am or the British Open. I mean, that's exactly like it.
Yeah. I mean, I hit 5 iron from 120 yards, and the funny thing was is that it was the perfect club.
Yeah. I mean, that,
my 5 iron's normally my 210 club.
I'm kind of with JP on that. That's fine if you're just out playing in a foursome, but when you get, like Spencer said, everybody went off one.
Yeah.
And when you have that, then you've got just such a wide range of weather that, like you said, can change so quickly.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well,
I mean, and with no wind, that golf course is not difficult. As you saw on the Monday morning there was a 64, a couple other rounds in the mid-60s, and then same in the afternoon. On Tuesday, once it got a little calm, there were a couple 66s. And as you saw in the final match, I think, Ollie Osborne was 11 under, I think, and lost for 36 holes.
Yeah.
Mr. Facci was 12 or 13.
And there were some, I remember looking at maybe when they were the quarterfinalists and they had everybody's qualifying scores. I mean, there were some 77 64s, maybe a 79 65. I mean, there were some high scores and low scores, which normally does not happen.
Yeah, I mean, I would have loved to play that course in the wind that they played it at for the semifinal match and the final match, just to see how easy it actually was. I mean, you know, those guys with all that pressure were still 6 and 7 under. Like, can you imagine if there wasn't that pressure of in the that semifinal match of getting to play in the Masters in the U.S. Open? they could have probably scared 60.
I'm about to say, I've always thought watching it, obviously never made the semifinals or the finals, I feel like you'd almost be more nervous in the semifinals.
Definitely.
Than the finals.
With as much on the line?
I would be for sure.
I mean, once you get to the finals,
it's a relief.
Yeah, you want to win, but damn, you're in the Masters and the U.S. Open.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, well, obviously you get your name on the trophy and then you get to play the British Open. Well, I have no desire to play the British Open after this past week, so I couldn't care less.
Yeah. Man, that semifinal match with Gupta and Strafashi was interesting.
Oh. I mean, if you're Gupta, like, what are you doing on 18?
Yeah. What are you doing trying to stand behind Strafashi when he's trying to line up that putt?
Oh, did you guys see the
Kisner?
Guys saw the Twitter battle
did
he not see it?
I saw what Kisner said.
And then
where
Gupta came out.
Gupta
and he's
said
like,
something.
Gupta was like, "I should just find it. Let me just find it while we're doing this, because it's worth reading." I think.
It is. I'm on Team Kisner, but...
It's still just kind of comical how it
out. We literally had the exact same situation happen with Sam Kuvion, who was in the sixth flight, his partner, and people they were playing in the sixth flight of the member guest that happened. Like, he had to tell the guy, quit getting behind him while he's about to play.
Oh, Gupta might have deleted his comment.
And then we have it in the semifinals of the USAM.
Did Gupta really delete it, JP?
Oh, no. Here we go. So Kisner, I'm just going to quote it word for word. Kisner says, never thought I'd pull for a tech ned, but after that stunt, Gupta pulled, trying to stand just to the side of his line while he got putted. Yeah, he kind of messed that up. Just the side of his line while he putted. I hope Strafacci dusts him. Ain't got no time for that. And he tagged Roberto Castro. And then Gupta goes, if beating up on a 21-year-old college kid makes you feel better, then go for it. I made an honest mistake that ultimately had no meaning. But let's be clear, there was no stunt pulled. Don't appreciate an attack on my character when you're watching on your couch at home. Castro goes, 21 isn't a kid. Kiz isn't couch Twitter guy. He's played a few tournaments of his own, and he didn't attack your character. Kisner comes back. Better get used to it if you think you're going to play this game for a living. You knew exactly what you're doing. Learn from it and be better.
Did Gupta respond?
No, nothing else after that.
What do you say after that? Like, yeah.
This is while Kisner's contending in the event, by the way. Right? Wasn't Kisner up there?
Yeah, he finished third, I think.
Yeah. So Kisner's just trolling people during the event.
And as we saw in the final match, Strafacci is slow. But when I was watching the semifinal match, Gupta was, holy cow. He walked around a putt four times on like the 12th or 13th hole for par. It was maybe an 8-footer. And it was so painful.
It is kind of interesting that every match that Strafacci played had another side topic to it.
Yeah, you had his caddy, or the guy beat in the Sweet 16.
I was watching that live. I stood up on my couch and I was like, what?
I got a text from somebody that said, did you just see what happened? And I was like, no. And then I turned it on. I was like, oh, my gosh, what is going on?
I was watching it with my dad and my brother and my mom, and I made them pause it and rewind it. I'm like, did his caddy just touch the sand? And sure enough, they rewind it, and they're like, oh my god, he did. And then 20 seconds later, they bring it up on the telecast, and I'm like, oh my gosh, Strafacci just won the match. Like, can you think of a more brutal way to an ending of a match by match ever?
No. I mean, especially with it being tied. It wasn't like he was one up and then they went to extra holes and he lost. I mean, they were tied and he loses.
He was there in two, right?
No, he was there in three.
Okay.
So
I mean, Strafacci had a little bit of an advantage, but...
They were about tied. Like, Strafacci was short left.
Yeah.
Yeah, Strafacci was short. He had a big slope to come up. If he'd have got a 60-degree wedge out, I think Oliva Pinto would have had the advantage, but if Strafacci got the putter out, he would have had the advantage.
How do you feel about the rules of golf there? Like, clearly Segundo had no clue that his caddy was doing that. Should there be like an amendment? And I'm not saying that there is, but like, would you want to win that way? Well, I guess whatever. US amateur, yeah, you want to win no matter what, but like, there should be like a gentleman saying, like, no, we're going to play on. That doesn't affect our round here.
Well, Strafacci's dad was the one that pointed it out, wasn't he?
That's why Hagestad didn't get to anchor the next day.
I probably disagree with you, JP. Like I know the guy didn't do it on. Like, he's a local caddy. Like, he doesn't know the rules of golf. Like, I'm sure he does that all the time with the people that he caddies for on a daily basis, but.
You just can't do that.
I mean, it's such an advantage, too, because, I mean, with how windy it was that day, all the sand was blowing out of the bunker. You know, I beg the question, I don't think that was the first time he did it.
During the week?
Like, they just happen to have TV cameras.
Yeah, I don't know why you do it on the 18th hole of the Tide match.
Frank Strafacci happened to be there. Then the guy doubles down. He's just like, I didn't touch it.
Yeah. It's like, does he not know that there's five cameras watching him?
Dude, they've
like,
got a drone on you.
Like, I mean, it's unbelievable that he's like, I did not touch the sand. I did not touch the sand. It's like, dude, yes, you did.
Oh, that was just a bad situation. I don't know any way to describe that.
Coverage was awesome, though. Nonstop, uninterrupted.
Yeah. Thank you, Rolex. We'll give them a free shout out for the podcast.
Other than the Strafacci family tree, I mean, how many times could they talk about the kid's granddad, which he died 10 years before the kid was born? Yep. Like, it's not like they had this close relationship, and his granddad said on his dying bed, go win a USGA trophy.
This is insensitive here.
This is very insensitive. But he won the 1935 Publix Championship. How many people do you think competed in the 1935 Publix USGA Championship?
You gonna take all of Bobby Jones' victories
away?
They have
since disbanded the Publix.
Is that what he won? He won the North South too, right?
Well, the USGA kept showing his picture. And then they have the comment that Arnold said that was little 50, Frank was his 58. Was his hardest match. And I mean, just spare me. I just got tired of it. I'm sorry.
I saw a tweet from Drew Stoltz, who does some podcast.
My favorite podcast out there. It's way better than this.
He was like, it said, you know what, I'm gonna find it just like JP went and researched just so I don't screw it up.
They just released one while you're finding it. They just did a podcast today with Ricky Barnes, and there is no way that this podcast makes it to tomorrow, because Ricky Barnes told one of the most ridiculous Augusta National stories I've ever heard.
I can remember Ricky Barnes. He was a senior when I was a freshman, so we were on the range at the Carpet Capital in Dalton, and he's up there hitting like 60-degree wedges in the morning warming up. And after every one of them, he'd fart. He did it like 10 times in a row. He'd hit a little chip and be like, hit a little chip.
Like, all right.
And this is coming off him winning the USAM the year before, I believe.
His interview on the Drew Stoltz and Cold Nose podcast was must listen to.
Augusta will not like that.
No.
I have found a tweet from Drew.
The sleazy man.
The tweet says, watching the USAM, I don't even know where Ali Osborne is from, but I know the entire Strafacci family history from the time they landed on Ellis Island.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, did you guys hear the interview? I think it was after the quarterfinal match, maybe, that Ali Osborne said he was going to go have a brownie after the round to celebrate.
I heard that.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit more about the area.
So cannabis is legal in the state of Oregon. So from the time I landed in Eugene and drove the 2.5 hours to Bandon, on no interstates, by the way, it's a gorgeous drive, but boy, is it scary. But every little town you go through, you pass cannabis shops. And I'm not going to lie, when he said that he was going to go celebrate with a brownie, I mean, he looked a little out there anyways in his interviews, and I thought he was talking about a weed brownie.
They brought it up more. It's a featured thing on their website of how he had like a brownie every day.
Yeah, my mind went straight there when he said that, just because he looked a little out there when he was talking. And I'm like, oh man, I mean, whatever works for you, I guess, man. Like, good luck.
But then they like said that about the brownie, but then they piggybacked and they were like, oh, but you know, he takes his fitness very seriously, and you know, he just indulges in the brownies out here. It's just a weird comment.
I mean, how I never even heard of him before. Which
I was just gonna ask. I've never
seen him at any events. And I mean, I had heard of every semifinal or every round person that made it to the round of 16 and seen them hit a golf ball in person, except for him. I had no idea who he was, and his golf swing is gorgeous.
Loved his golf swing. He looked like, now him and Strafaci were hitting it pretty close to each other, but I mean, Ollie looked like he just absolutely ripped it. Like that drive on 18 that they both hit, you know, he was only 10 yards behind Osborne, maybe even less than that. And I mean, you could tell Ollie just bombed one. But yeah, that was a very good golf swing, and he played fast.
Played fast. They both. Well, no,
Strafaci. Well, Strafaci would play fast if his dad would get out of his way.
Good old Frank. There were a couple times early in the matches. One of the maybe the match against Segundo, and I'm not accusing Frank of doing anything, but it seemed like he was standing kind of close to Tyler and in the direct spot of where the wind was blowing. So if you've got a DVR, go back and watch that match.
Oh, and I did notice that he was standing awfully close to Tyler
a few times.
He was doing it every match.
Right, but there were different angles every time. Sometimes he'd be like directly in front of him. Sometimes he'd be a little bit behind, and he always had the bag on his shoulder. I wonder if he was like blocking the wind. I don't know.
I mean, there's nothing out there to block the wind. I don't think. Well, I don't think him standing there really had any effect on it.
I mean, it had more of an effect than not doing it.
I mean, I will tell you though, watching it on TV, and you know the announcers kept saying like, you know, I'm surprised they're not giving him this 2 footer or what here or not. But I mean, when it's blowing 25 out there, I mean, like, you have to focus on an 18-inch putt because. You know, I think they even said it on the telecast. They said they cut and rolled the greens Monday morning, and they didn't cut and roll them again until, like, their quarterfinals. They would either cut them or roll them in the morning. They never did both again because of the wind.
Dang.
That's what Spencer told me, that before Mondays, they either cut and rolled them or either double cut them for Monday, but then Tuesday – they knew it was going to blow again. They just rolled him. He's like, they didn't even cut him. And he was like, damn it.
Did you see
Spencer? Why'd you not do that Monday?
Yeah, it's like the wind was less on Tuesday than it was Monday afternoon. So it didn't make any sense.
Did you see Spencer out there?
I did. I saw him in stroke play walking. I was done with the third hole at Bandon Dunes. And he was done. I was walking to the fourth tee. And he was on the eighth hole walking to the ninth tee, and we crossed. And I think I said, hey, what's that? I said, hey, how's it going? He's like, have fun. That's all he said. I'm like, oh, boy. Because that was just about where the wind was starting to pick up, too. So it was windy. I mean, it was windy as hell when Spencer played 5 and 6, which were the two hardest holes on Bandon Dunes. It was windy when he played them, but it was even stronger when I played them. And it was – I went driver hybrid and still had 60 yards in on a 430-yard par 4.
So how hard, speaking of some of those holes, how hard is number 15? I mean, the semifinals were three fives and a six.
It's the hardest par three I've ever played. And there was no wind during the semifinals.
I know. They just couldn't. Like, they couldn't get it on the green.
I know. There's nowhere to miss it. It falls off everywhere. The only place to miss it is like in maybe a 5-yard area, maybe just left. It's left, but it's just maybe the first 5 yards onto the green.
And they said that bunker is the deepest one on the course.
Oh, you can't see anything because there's no trees, no nothing. All you can see is the sky. and if you hit it over the green, it rolls into the hazard. If you hit it right, it rolls into the gorse bush. And if you hit it short of the bunker, you got to hit it over the deepest bunker on the course.
I mean, between the semifinals and the finals, out of those three matches, Strafaci was the only one that hit the green in the championship match, and he lagged it to like 8 feet, and what's-his-name was going to make a double, so he just gave it to him. I mean, other than that,
there wasn't a par.
Doubles, and it was three doubles and a triple in the semifinal.
I mean, in the stroke play, it was playing 155 dead into a 30-35-mile-an-hour wind. I hit 4-iron and didn't get it to the green, and it rolled down short of the bunker, and I had a chip shot. But Austin Eckroat hit the most beautiful 3-iron I've ever seen, and he hit it to like 2 feet on that hole to a front flag and made birdie. He shot 71 in the 40-mile-an-hour wind, and it is the most impressive round of golf I've ever seen.
What did he make match play?
He did not. He bogeyed three of the last four at Bandon Trails in round two to miss the playoff by a shot.
Ooh. That sucks. Well,
yeah, a lot of big names went out. Ogletree, Hammer, Eckroat.
Yeah.
Quade Cummins. But then Quade Cummins just won a GCAA event.
Yeah, I mean it was crazy just the draw that you got.
I mean, when you go from 264 people to 64, that's doesn't take much to miss that.
I noticed there weren't as many Louisville players as we thought there might have been.
Well, the Louisville players, did I not tell this story last week on the podcast with why there were no Louisville guys there?
No.
No.
Oh my goodness. I guess I got to be careful with what I'm saying here. Because I'm not sure I'm supposed to know how much of this I'm supposed to know, if I'm supposed to know it at all. So there were three players exempt into the field, and one of them was like the fifth alternate. Well, for the record, Gupta was the 23rd alternate on the Monday, a week before they played, and got in. So really? I'm just going to go ahead and say that there were four Louisville players that were in the field. So I don't know if you saw, I saw it in the ESPN bottom ticker on Tuesday or Wednesday of, I think I saw it on the bottom line the night that we did the podcast last week.
Yeah.
And it said, or maybe it was whenever we did the podcast. And it said on the bottom line, 29 Louisville athletes test positive for fall athletes test positive for COVID. And I didn't think anything of it. And then I realized when I looked at the tee times that came out that I was like, wait a minute, one of the Louisville guys that was supposed to be in the first group or first or second group is no longer on there. And so I kind of reach out to some people and I find out that this party where all these fall athletes got COVID at Louisville, four golfers went to it.
Oh, gosh.
Four golfers went to it. And I think it was one of the four that was coming tested positive for it. But the problem was that they were in close proximity with the other three guys. So I think the USGA told them not to come out because they most likely had COVID.
Yeah.
So all four of them did not get to come out because a couple of them decided to go to a party where it basically spread to half, you know, a bunch of athletes at Louisville. At least that's the way that the story was told to me.
I mean, that would make sense.
Yeah. So, and you know, I've seen plenty of other stories too. Of, you know, oh, what is it? Notre Dame came out today and they said out of all the students at Notre Dame, it was like 50 some had tested positive for COVID prior to yesterday. And then all of a sudden they had like 140 something test positive today and they traced it back to some party last weekend. So, I mean, this is going on at college campuses all across the country. This one just happened to affect the USAM.
How many, you know, were there any other COVID cases at the USAM?
So, if you think about it, Gupta doesn't get in the field if that doesn't happen. Because from what I understand, he was the third to last player in the field.
What? So, why were there so many alternates? Were there a lot of COVID cases?
I think a lot of internationals weren't able to get in the country.
Does Gupta play in the lineup for Oklahoma State? Does he travel for them?
Sometimes.
Yeah, he played in majority of the events
because that's always from North Carolina and is at Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
So
oh,
I guess
he's oh. back to the COVID thing. So I get out there. So the practice rounds are Saturday and Sunday, and I got out there Thursday to get my COVID test. Well, Friday they had a par three shootout at Brandon Preserve, which is the 13 hole par three course. We play a fivesome. It's me and U.S. Mid-Am runner-up last year, Joe Duraney, and two guys that played at Mississippi State and Cohen Trolio, who was a semifinalist last year at Pinehurst. And we play a fivesome. You know, we get done with 13 holes. At the end of the 13 holes, we all fist bumped and said, you know, good playing with you. And, you know, I went over and hand sanitized immediately. And then I go back to my hotel. And then I get a call from Joe a couple hours later and I missed it. And I called him back. He didn't answer. And I'm like, oh, I texted him, say, must not have been that important. He said, on the phone, hold on, calls me back. He's like, dude, Cohen tested positive. And I'm like, what?
Oh.
And so the health department never actually called me from the Oregon Health Department, but they called the other three people in the group and they cleared everybody. But they did want to do contact tracing, and Cohen, I think, and his dad was there with him, and they drove back to Mississippi.
No way. From Oregon.
Yes.
Holy cow.
So, and apparently there was another player that tested positive from what I heard. I don't know who it was. I'm sure, though, if you did your research, you could probably figure it out. And then supposedly it was a worker for, I'm not sure if it was the USGA or Bandon Dunes, but I was told there were three positive tests and two of them are players. And, you know, other than Cohen Trolio, I'm not sure who the other player was. And I think it was a worker or somebody. I don't know if it was for Bandon or the USGA or Golf Channel or whatnot, but I just know that there were three positive tests, but only two players had to withdraw because of them.
I can't believe they drove. I mean, I get why they did, but
they had no choice.
To drive from Oregon back to Mississippi. Yeah,
I mean, you can't get on a plane. You can't
fly. God. You're flagged. Like, you're done. I'm surprised they could pump gas.
I know.
No, I'm surprised they could stay in a hotel. They probably had to sleep in their car the whole way back. Well,
no chance they did that, right? Like, no chance.
No.
Like, you know, they just went in a hotel and just acted like nothing was wrong. Hey. From what I understand, he did not display any symptoms.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know anything after maybe 48 hours after we found out. So I guess it could have. But I know that 48 hours after he found out he was positive, which was 4 days after he had actually gotten tested, he still was showing no symptoms. So, I mean, heck, if I was him, I'd be asking for an exemption in Oakmont next year.
100%.
Be like, I had a false positive, because his dad did not test positive for it. And they were sharing a room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't know what's going on with this anymore.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. I was actually thinking, because at that point after I found out, I had seen the weather forecast that I was going to have to play in 40-mile-an-hour winds. I was kind of hoping the USGA was going to be like, you know, unfortunately, you know, just for the safety of all the competitors in the championship, you're not going to be able to play. And then I'd be like, you know what? I'll go quietly if you exempt me into Oakmont, and I'll be the biggest supporter, and just get me into Oakmont next year.
Take a rain check.
How about everybody that was still there within the bubble that was able to watch on the final match?
Yeah.
There were a lot of people out there.
One thing I want to know is, so you were not allowed more than two people, and if your caddy was there, you were only allowed one other, so you could only have two people travel with you. I saw Strafacci's dad, mom, and brother during the practice round days.
Oh, you did? So
they were there all week, and I'm not sure how they were. And I guess they knew he was going to win, so they were like, yeah, sure, you can go ahead and bring a third.
And then the final match, I saw Bruce Hepler, the head coach for Georgia Tech, was there. And
their assistant was there, too.
I saw another guy that looked like the assistant. So there was they relaxed some rules there towards the end, I guess.
What they did every day was actually, it was kind of annoying, because I finally turned my phone on silent because the texts were waking me up. You get a text at like 4:30 in the morning. So I guess 7:30 Eastern time. I guess someone could have been sending it from the Eastern time. But you got a text at like 4:30 every morning, and it was like a link that you had to click. And then I'm sure it's similar to what JP had to do when
healthy roster.
Yeah, healthy roster, and you had to like fill out everything, and then you get a text after you filled it out that said you were cleared, and then you had to show.
Man, how many of those symptoms do you get if you have a hangover?
At least half of them.
dry mouth, headache.
It's like, are you tired? Does your head hurt? Did you not sleep well?
Yeah, it's like have you coughed in the past? Does your 365 days? Like, I mean, you just press no. I mean, I press no on every one of them every day.
Yeah, why are you gonna say yes?
Are you? Oh no, you're probably not getting them anymore. I was still getting them from the LPGA because they've kept playing.
I got it. I got it every day. I did not get it.
You have to respond unsubscribe.
No, I kept getting them until Sunday morning, which was the championship match. Was the last day I got it. I was getting them for the women's AM the week before.
I was getting them all last week through Scotland, the Scottish LPGA event. And finally on Saturday, I like emailed somebody at the LPGA. I'm like, why do I keep getting healthy roster? I'm not in Scotland.
The day that I left, which was the round of 64, it was the same people that were doing the temperature checks every day, and they put a sticker on, like you had a badge, and they take your temperature after you showed them that you've been cleared on your phone, and then they put a sticker on the back of your badge. And I asked the woman that was doing it, because she had done it every day. I asked her if she had actually had to turn people away. She's like, oh, I've turned like 5 or 6 people away. And I'm like, really, that many? She's like, oh, well, she was like, it's because they didn't have their badge. I'm like, oh, I meant did anyone have a temperature? And she said no, that no one had had a temperature in the hundreds the entire week that she was doing it. So, well, it was super weird too, because so people, you could get there Wednesday or Thursday to get tested for COVID, and it was like a free for all. Like there was nothing going on. I don't even think I was getting I think I was still getting the pretext, but there was no one putting a sticker on or taking your temperature change. And then all of a sudden, come Saturday, after they find out 3 people tested positive on Friday, all of a sudden it was like Fort Knox getting in there. Like you had to show your badge and sticker, like to go into the clubhouse, to go to the range, to go onto the putting green, to go to the first tee. It was ridiculous.
Props to the USGA for pulling it off.
Yeah.
Well, switching gears, what do you think about the playoffs coming up? Playoffs.
Nothing.
I mean, are they still doing the thing where whoever's in first at the tour championship is like 15 under par?
It's a handicap event.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a net event.
That's so dumb.
It is pretty dumb.
I would have loved a 15 shot lead on the first tee last Monday.
Yeah, it's what, 10 under to even, I guess. There might be more than that. I don't remember.
Is there any way that Tiger plays all 3?
Yeah, yeah. He's winning this one.
Assuming that he makes the tour championship.
Well, no, he's not going to play all 3. He's going to win this week, take a week off, and then win the tour championship.
So, but then comes the question, what happens if Tiger, let's just say he makes the cut and finishes T25. So he moves up to like, what, 40th in the FedEx Cup. So it means he's got to play at Olympia Fields next week in order to make it to East Lake. Does he? Or do you think he's already made up his mind that he's not playing?
No, I think he'll play.
Because is there a week off between the Tour Championship and the U.S. Open?
There's a week, but it's not a week. I mean, there's the event out in maybe Napa.
Yeah, yeah, but Tiger. But I mean, like he can take the week off.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. A lot of those guys are going to play for the next 5.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tiger's definitely.
But well, Tiger's back's fine. I mean, did you guys see the picture of him caddying for Charlie in the 9-hole U.S. Kids?
I don't want to talk about it. Weekend?
Yeah, Charlie went in by 5, shooting a bogey 3-3 under.
When I played junior golf, my parents couldn't talk to me on the golf course.
It is a little different now.
Why? They could shoot 33. They're able to be on the golf course by themselves. It's not like they're shooting 56 and need to be babysat.
I'm not advocating either way.
Sounds like you were. You're like, it's different now. Like,
no, I'm saying
like, we got high-speed internet.
No, I'm saying that's what they do now is they let the parents do it. You're right. When we were playing, like your parents couldn't go anywhere near you or somebody tried to say they were giving you advice.
Yeah.
Now they got, you know, all that U.S. kids golf they have, full-time caddies.
I tweeted about it today and the Petefish family came at me again. Every single time I say something that they don't like, they just, like, a couple weeks ago for the PGA Tour IQ series, there were 2 amateurs, and she was like, there's only 1 amateur playing. Like, no, look at the field, lady. Why are you always coming at me? And today she's like, it's pretty cool that U.S. Kids Golf gets to caddy. I'm like, no, it's not. Let the kid play. That movie, The Short Game on Netflix?
Yeah.
That's the most ridiculous thing in the world, where all these parents are just hoofing their kids' little U.S. Kids Golf bag and lining them up. Go home.
I mean, I think all junior sports have gotten ridiculous lately. Like, all these kids that play one sport, and that's all they do. Like, there are kids that are 8 and 9 years old that play one sport, and it's golf. I just don't think that's good in the long run.
Did you guys see who Charlie Woods ended up beating by 5? I think it was Frankie Muniz Jr.
Yeah.
Like, kid from Malcolm in the Middle.
Like, is that Frankie Muniz, the guy, the kid TV star?
That's, it might like, be, because that he plays a bunch of golf, Frankie Muniz.
Like, is that the same guy? Like, is that his son?
Yeah, it's
like,
got to be. It was like the Pebble Beach Pro-Am of US Kids Golf.
I mean, how are you if you're the third parent and your kid's playing and the two caddies are Frankie Muniz and Tiger Woods?
I mean, can somebody not sneak a picture of Tiger and throw it on social media? Can he just go caddy for his kid?
He can't.
No. The answer's no.
No.
That's just annoying. Like, Jason, let him just go be a dad.
Jason Bone just did another podcast with No Laying Up.
Yeah.
And he told Tiger's story where, like, across the street from one of the tournaments they were at, it was a really cool playground. He's like, Tiger, you should bring your kids over to the playground. It's a really good time. He's like, Jason, I wish I could, man. And Jason Bone's like, oh, shit. That's right. You really can't go anywhere.
Can't do it. Yeah.
Half the people listening to this podcast are thinking, who is Jason Bone?
That we have true golf fans that listen to our podcast, Justin.
Come on.
I mean, I know who he is.
Hey, how come you didn't make a call into the voicemail this week? Were you just so confident you were coming on?
No, I actually went to do it at about 5 p.m. today and then realized I don't have service at my parents' house. So, So hopefully my wife lets me come back home after I get a negative COVID test coming up tomorrow, I think. So it'd be nice to be home. Been gone for, I think in the last month, I think I've slept 3 nights at my house because I've been playing in golf tournaments. So I gotta give a shout out to my wife for letting me play golf. Travel the country. I did go back to Lexington yesterday and get my dog. So my dog's up at my parents' house with me. So to give my wife a break from my dog.
There you go.
All right. Well, any other parting words of wisdom?
Lock of the week. Auto press. Wow. Hold on. We didn't get an auto press move from the USAM.
Yeah, you had to have plenty out there.
Auto press move from the USAM. Oh, I mean, clearly when you try and stand right behind somebody to read their putt that's also on your line.
So
or like the
caddy. Just,
like, yeah, like touching the sand, like I still can't comprehend somebody doing that.
Hold on. Speaking of that caddy. I meant to bring this up earlier. So it was the match before that or one of those matches before that
where he had
somebody tweeted out a video and it was like that caddy that touched the sand was caddying against another local caddy and his kid that what's the guy's name that he caddied for?
Segundo Oliva Pinto.
Yeah. So he makes like a 4 or 5 foot putt to win the hole. And I mean, there is his caddy over there. Absolutely fist pumping like Tiger Woods when he made the putt to win the or to go into the playoff of the U.S. Open.
He was doing like a Mortal Kombat.
No, it was that morning.
It was like a Mortal Kombat kill shot into the ground, basically.
So that was that morning, and it was.
So it was outside the cut that tweeted this. So they tweeted two different pictures. So they did this at first, and it said it was a video of the first one that said, "Here's how you earn a good tip." If you're a local caddy. Right. And then the next one was like, here's how you don't earn a tip.
And but it was the same guy.
When they tweeted it, they didn't know it was the same guy. And like an hour later, they're like, just by chance, this was the same caddy.
And that made a lot of sense.
Yeah. I thought that they did it on purpose. So I tweeted with them. I went back and forth with them.
I think they talked about it on the telecast. But the previous, I can't remember, it was 5 or 6 USGA championships were held at Van and Dunes. Each time, the winner had a local caddy. So that's why, and there weren't very many local caddies that made it to match play. And I think they were like the last two in the round of 32, which is why they were going, he was going nuts.
They were toe-to-toe. The USGA has kind of done like a thing lately where they've done like the US Amateur at Chambers Bay and then got a US Open. Do you foresee a US Open going there?
There's no way. After the draw that I got, like, I mean, you could eliminate half the field if that happens. But
do you think that draw is worse than what you can get at St. Andrews?
I don't know, but they already have the British Open. You don't need two British Opens in a year.
Right.
I mean, the views on that golf course are spectacular.
But like logistically, they can't get people there.
No, there's literally nothing there. I mean, there is nothing. Nothing within. There's not enough hotel. Like I don't know where the people are going to stay. Is the problem.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the nearest big city is Eugene, and it's 2.5 hours away, and is a 2-lane road most of the way but to get there. So I don't see them getting it. But that'd be a great place for, say, like a President's Cup.
I mean, see Matt's play. A lot of people go to the President's Cup, too, though.
What?
A lot of fans go to the President's Cup, too, though.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking more of from the actual playing golf perspective. Like, it doesn't match play. It doesn't matter what the draw is.
What if they just said that they were going to play the U.S. Amateur there every year for the rest of the U.S. Amateur?
I might turn pro.
So that was a good little USAM Wyndham Jim Herman recap.
Man, I'm glad Justin Tereshko could make some time for that. A little bit spur of the moment to get him on.
Yeah.
But it was
well, like I said, you came in and you said he wants to do a recap on the USAM for like 10 minutes. Yeah, and I said, let's do way more than 10 minutes on the USAM.
I think him and I had talked about it the other day. I just vaguely remember it, but that was great.
Yeah, the USAM had a lot more going on than...
Oh, there was tons of stuff. And we could have covered a lot more, but he gave us a lot of inside info that we... weren't privy to.
I actually saw tonight that that was the highest rated USAM they've had in a long time. It had like 500,000 viewers on the Sunday match.
And it wasn't even on...
not even on NBC or whatever.
Right. Well, it's been on Fox the past couple of years.
That's right. It changed back. But
it's been on local channel, I guess they call it. What do they call them?
It's been on...
Syndicated?
It's been on NBC or...
NBC, but it wasn't on cable before. If that makes sense. It's usually not on the golf channel.
True.
So that's a lot. That's a high rating to get from being on the golf channel.
Yeah, but when you get primetime golf, people watch.
Mm-hmm. It was fantastic.
It was a lot of fun to watch. And you just never know what you're going to get with a lot of the amateurs. I mean, like we were talking about that 15th hole where the semifinals, there were 3 fives and a six on a par three. And between the four guys that are left in the field.
And then the marine layer was coming in.
Oh, I don't know how they finished.
Had back-to-back weeks of marine layer from the PGA to that.
He had Bones out there. They'd hit it, and he'd be like, guys, I don't know where that ball went.
They didn't know where it went. And then they're like, they just heard that it's on the green.
I can't believe they kept playing.
Right?
I mean, I get it. They probably didn't want to come back tomorrow, but that was interesting there for a little while.
They must have known the lines.
But anyway, we've got a brand new segment that JP set up over the weekend, threatened to quit over.
I did.
And
I announced that I was quitting the podcast on Sunday night.
And I tried to tell him, just because you tweet something out on Saturday and Sunday, people may not see it.
I threw it on the Instagram. I figured that there was going to be some love, but we started a hotline, I guess you can call it, voicemail box, whatever.
Yeah.
Number, we got a local number. 678-404-2272. Easy to remember.
678-404-2272.
It's got a little ring to it. 72, good golf number.
Yeah, 2272.
Yeah.
So, I like it.
We got a couple calls.
So throughout the week, whenever you think of something.
Yeah. And like I said on Instagram, I mean, if you see Lexi Thompson cheating on the golf course, please call us.
Absolutely throw that in there.
There's no more NBC call-in. They don't care, but we do. We want to hear when that happens. And it's no surprise who our first caller was. I mean, Stu, I'm going to give you one guess.
I'm going to guess David Luttrell.
Yeah. Yeah. Unbelievable. David's actually, we were chatting while I was making this on Saturday night, I guess it was. And he called in twice, but I don't think he liked his first one very much. So he made another one. So we'll go ahead and play that one if I can figure out how to do that. Here we go.
Hey, this is David, second time caller now. I'm calling in because I just want to get your guys' take on what Siwoo Kim was doing on, I think it was hole six. Pulling driver on a short par four, hitting it into the junk, basically costing the tournament there. So some of your take on that. And also, what do you think of Tiger's kid winning by five already? I mean, is he just greatness born? Or what are we taking there? All right, let's have another good week of this pod. I want to hear it. Let's go.
So, Siwoo Kim, I mean...
Yeah, that sixth hole he's talking about, I was watching some of the coverage on Thursday and Friday because the PGA Tour Live, and Brendan was one of the featured groups, and it's just a layup hole.
Right.
Like, they even made the comment, they were like, no, everybody in the field is lit up here, so I have no idea what Siwoo Kim was doing.
Maybe he was just so close to getting a second hole in one the day before. That or whenever he got almost got two hole in ones, he was like, maybe I might as well get one on a par four.
I think some of those guys just have such a hard time being patient.
Yeah, but that was a bad stretch. What he played three holes in a row, three over.
Yeah,
and ended up losing by three.
Yeah, I think he. I know he was 18 under at one. Yeah, with like playing 17. So yeah, he finished three shots back. But yeah, I mean that was the whole tournament.
It cost him the tournament.
Just some of those guys, like I said. That's where a caddy can get in his ear.
Mm-hmm. You're right. I mean, it was a bunched up leaderboard and just lost patience and tried squeezing one out there.
But what are you going to gain from that?
Yeah, you can make a three, maybe. Like, I've always been under the impression, don't be overly aggressive unless an eagle is realistic.
Exactly. On a par five. Like, par five. Don't go for it unless you think you can make an eagle.
If you can make it, like, don't plan on an easy birdie. Work on the stuff that you work on at home. Fundamental wedges, you know?
Yeah, hit it. And
hit it.
Hit it where everybody else
does. Get a good angle.
Yeah. And
play your game. Tiger Woods kid.
We touched on that a little bit with
Justin. We touched on caddying. I don't know. It's too early to tell. I mean.
How old is Charlie Woods? Do we know?
9? 12? 10? 13?
I'll go with 9 21. Because he's playing a 9-hole.
21.
One by five and a...
He's shooting 33. I mean, they're playing from the fairway probably.
Bogey-free.
Nice.
So, hold on. That's my other thing that we didn't bring up. These kids now that are shooting these scores, like him shooting 3-under bogey-free, why... When we grew up, we just... And I know I've gotten on this point before. We just played the red tees. And you just tried to play... Like, it was even bogey.
Yeah, and then eventually you start moving back and, like...
Yeah, and eventually you shoot par, but you just played from the red tees. Now right. These kids play, like, a 150-yard par four.
Mm-hmm.
And they drive it next to the green and chip on. Well, that's a birdie. I'm like, it's a 150-yard hole.
They're playing an executive course and then saying they're shooting 66.
Yeah, I'm just...
I get the idea of trying to teach kids how to score, but is that doing it? Is that giving them false hope? Like, eventually, you're going to have to go back there.
Yeah, just everybody play the red tees.
Yeah.
Or the ladies' tees. Whatever tees are the forward tees.
When I was,
tees.
Like, six, I remember, like, we did a three-hole club championship, and they put little American flags at, like, 120 yards.
You're six.
Yeah. I might have been six.
You're not nine shooting 33 played, on a 2,000-yard golf course.
I played three holes, and I think I shot, like, 18 for three holes from 120 yards, and I was pumped. Might have won it. Richard had probably won it. Richard cleaned up on our three-hole club championships back in the day.
I mean, my only, the first tournament that I remember playing was like an Atlanta junior golf event when I was like nine, and we would play nine-hole matches, and I shot 48 at Berkeley Hills.
Right, pumped.
I mean, so what, like 44-1? Finished like third with 48.
Yeah.
Now these kids go and they shoot like 34 and they lose by two. Like, what? I just don't get it. I don't get it.
We're on the same page. But I don't know. I think it's a little too early to call for greatness for him. But Latrell, we look forward to more calls from you, man. Keep them coming. And if you want us to play the first one sometime, we'll do it. It was entertaining. But
there were a few good gracious in there. Like, what am I doing?
I mean, it was.
We enjoyed it though.
It was probably within 11 minutes of me booking this thing on Google Voice, which is a great system.
All right, let's move on to.
We have a second caller of the week.
One, should we say who it is?
He's going to say who he is, and then we can talk about it.
Okay, now let's preface this that I have not heard this.
You have not heard you, yeah. So this is first time. Well, you didn't hear either one of them. This is like
that's true. I only heard David Latrell's first.
You
one.
Only heard David's first one.
All right, let's hear the.
All right, so here we go. This is a little longer too.
Okay,
so bear with us here.
Hello, friends. Ponzi Cool Dan on the line. Just in the middle of rearranging some points here to make sure that I am, in fact, ahead of Stuart. Yes, it looks like I am beating him by 6. Hopefully there won't be any audits this week. Even if there are, I'm still going to be ahead of him. Okay, questions for you guys. Scarfacci doesn't really sound like a U.S. Am winner. Sounds more like somebody from The Godfather, but pretty cool. I think he's obviously going to owe a big present to Pinto's caddy. Which, is it me, or does that sound like a horse entry in a Kentucky Derby? Pinto's caddy. Speaking of our boy, Brant Brewer, do you think he's going to be like this generation's Steve Bartman? You know, the guy at that Cubs game who reached down for the ball and blew up the whole thing for the Cubs, and so, like, every year they replay it? Do you think every year we're going to see the replay of that guy touching the sand, or hopefully if they do replay it, replay the part where he kept saying, I didn't do anything. I didn't touch it. That guy is never going to get a loop again at Bandon Dunes. On to the PGA. Another question there. What in God's name is Siwoo Kim doing hitting driver on 2 par 4s that are clearly not driver holes? Dude goes 3 over in those 2 holes in the front. Loses the hole and misses the lead by 3 strokes. Well done. Last question, and this is purely hypothetical, but let's just suppose you were running a PGA pool where people had paid you money up front for the pool. And again, hypothetically, you had a decent pool, well, some cash lying around, and, you know, maybe you saw some things going on back in March that suggested that there might be a run on toilet paper and other products. So you might have bought some of those products thinking the market would go up and you'd be in a position. So hypothetically, if you now are maybe short a little bit on that PGA cash, here's the question. Do you tell the people in the pool now, or do you wait till later? You know, which way would you go on that? Because I have a friend who may need some guidance on that. Anyway, looking forward to hearing the answers to these questions this week. That's all I got. I'm out.
Oh, Ponzi Dan. I can answer his last question. And that's what he did for years is you make up. That's why there are fake names in there. And you go back and you just give them extra points and they bump up the leaderboard. Like Dylan Tannenbaum. Like that's a real name.
It's going to be tough this year though, because Lee Rogers is in third place and paying attention to this. And he's good. He's good with his auditing skills.
I know, but Ponzi Dan, I have no doubt that you can figure out how to bump a fake name up. And if we go back through the list of names, we picked out a bunch of fake ones a few years ago. So I have no doubt they're still in there.
If we're going to stick on the last question first,
it's just fresh on my mind.
Can we not sell this stuff anymore? Like there's still a market for it.
For what?
Selling his toiletry products that he bought with the cash, thinking that he'd be able to resell it in the future.
Oh yeah. Just got to hold on till the next pandemic. Maybe.
I mean, it's coming right now.
We're in the second wave, right?
You can third barely, wave. You can barely buy toilet paper, or not. You can buy paper towels barely down here at Publix.
Yeah, kids can't go to school, but we can practice football and have football games. Yeah.
So, I love the Pinto's caddy. He actually knew the guy's name. And
Brent Brewer. It took me a minute when he said Brent Brewer. I was like,
did they expose that on NBC?
Yeah, I saw that somewhere on Twitter.
Amazing. I thought he had just done research and figured it out.
I think they will definitely replay that for years to come.
Segundo handled it really well, and he actually had t-shirts made. And
oh, God.
There's a video of his caddy signing, or no, he was signing with the t-shirt, and his caddy was wearing it.
Never miss out on opportunity.
I think it's going to change the maybe training protocol for local caddies.
Well, it definitely is going to carry a lot of weight because Strafacci went on and won.
Right.
But I will say with the question about somebody being in The Godfather, I mean, what do we know about Frank? Like Frank Sr., the grandfather.
I mean,
1935 Publix champion.
Apparently, we got his history back to the Ellis
Island. Now, he's going
to
have his name on the same trophy as his grandfather he never met.
You hate that.
I just think it's...
How does this age thing work out, by the way?
What do you mean?
So his grandpa won the Publix and the North-South back in 1935?
Yeah, but then he was playing in the AM in 1955.
True. But I'm just trying to figure out, like, and you said that he passed away 20 years before Tyler was born?
10, according to the broadcast. And
his dad, maybe 60. His dad played golf with my dad. A lot of amateur golf with my dad.
We should have had your dad on the podcast to talk about.
He doesn't even know how to use his phone.
Mr. Strafacci.
He barely knew what was going on.
He
barely knew what was going on. But I don't know. There's some strange math there. You'd think that if this kid's was related to somebody that won it in 1935, it would have been a great-grandfather.
I don't never doubt the USGA and their blue blazer bloodlines.
that was a solid call. Thanks, Dan, for...
Yeah, he had the same point about Siwoo Kim.
He had the same point about Siwoo Kim.
Strafacci, the Ponzi pool.
Touched on it all.
Yeah.
I think you got to sell that product, Dan. Try to make up for some of it, because Lee Rogers is going to come knocking when he wins that thing. Although it's going on until, what, end of November? It's carrying on through the Masters.
I don't even know anymore.
You still got a chance, man. You're still alive. And it sounds like you got a vendetta against Ponzi, Dan. You guys should get a side bet going for the rest of the year. You're only like 6 points ahead.
Not when he's doing an audit. Not when he's in charge of the pen.
No, he was 6 points ahead of you, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That's right.
He's 6 points ahead of me, and I'm not getting the... Not with a guy who can change some things around. I don't even know the rules anymore. I mean, I feel like we did this so many years ago.
You just need top tens. Just need top tens.
We did this 7 months ago. It just feels like 7 years at this point.
You caught him a couple times, and you made sure you got those Sepp Straka points.
Yeah, Sepp Straka. I think I'm the only one with Sepp Straka. He's got 8 points for the year.
But guys, that was fun. Get more calls coming in. I mean, hopefully we'll get
678-404-2272.
Wow, good memory.
Good with numbers.
It's free to call.
It is toll free.
I don't know if you can text message it. Try.
Please don't do it late on a Saturday night.
Yeah, you don't know what you're gonna find out.
Oh, anyway,
those were our calls of the week.
That was a lot of fun. JP, are you in town for a while? This is the first time you've been in studio, and
yeah,
for like a month.
I'll be here next Tuesday.
Okay, we'll do it 1 week at a time at this point.
1 week at a time. I'm trying to think of having an auto press move. Can't really think of one besides the caddy.
I'm auto-pressing the hell out of Gupta.
Out of Gupta?
I mean, we had this exact same situation in the sixth flight at the member guest.
Unbelievable. What about Gupta's college coach caddy letting him hit like a 4-iron out of the fairway bunker with a hanging lie?
Yeah, I mean, what is he trying to hit it on the green? He said he had 235.
He had a 4 or 5-iron in there, right?
Yeah, just get it over the lip.
I mean, whatever. They're in that position. We weren't.
Yeah. So. Whatever.
Picks? We don't really need picks.
Jason Day.
That's good.
Four straight top tens.
He's back.
And I don't even like Jason Day.
No, you don't. You don't.
But he's playing well.
He is.
He's ready.
Matthew Wolf, I think, could do some work.
Mm.
That's my pick.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll be back next week.
Awesome.
Get your ass in that hole.
Yeah.
Great putt, man. Ooh.